DW Africa Link. This is DW's Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Eunice Wanjiru. We welcome our followers listening to us on our Facebook page, that's DW Africa, and also through our partner radio stations. Thank you for tuning in.
Coming up on the program, Rwanda denies closing its borders with Uganda because of political tensions between the two countries. We hear from its foreign affairs minister.
Rwanda's borders with all our neighbors are open on the Rwandan side. All the borders are open.
Zambia suspends a private TV channel for what it called biased reporting against the government. But a media consultant thinks this wasn't a right move.
We cannot make everyone become a public media. We cannot make everyone dance to their tune. No. We need to give room to diverse views.
Plus, the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, says that Burundi has forced the United Nations to shut its local human rights office after 23 years.
Stay with us until the end for these stories and much more to come. But first, world news in brief.
DW News.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. Tens of thousands of people have protested in fresh demonstrations across Algeria, calling on long-term President Abdelaziz Bouteflika not to run for a fifth term in April elections. Police were deployed in the capital of Algiers and elsewhere across the North African country as protesters held mass rallies dismissing the 82-year-old's election bid and his promise to quit early if re-elected. Samir Malal, a member of opposition group Standing Algeria Collective, called for international support.
On a un rôle à faire aussi pour faire, j'ai envie de dire, pression sur.
Our role is to pressure governments in the world to say it's important not to support this regime, and this transition must be done collectively.
Elle doit être faite de façon collective.
Bouteflika has been in power for 20 years and has not spoken in public since suffering a stroke in 2013. U.S. President Donald Trump has extended by 1 year international sanctions against Zimbabwe, saying the new government continues to pose a threat to U.S. foreign policy. The Trump administration maintains that President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government needs to allow for media freedom and for protest before sanctions are lifted. The renewal comes despite calls by African leaders for the sanctions to be lifted. In Germany, former Foreign Minister Klaus Kinkel has died at the age of 82. Among those paying tribute was Chancellor Angela Merkel, who described Kinkel as an uncompromising advocate for freedom and democracy. Kinkel was a member of the Liberal Free Democratic Party and served as a foreign minister from 1992 to 1998. He was one of Germany's best-known politicians. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Burundi shut its doors to the United Nations Human Rights Office on Tuesday. Burundi has dismissed UN reports of abuses, saying the human rights situation has improved since President Pierre Nkurunziza sought a third term in office in 2015. Ravina Shamdazani, a spokeswoman for the UN, contradicted this view.
We have very credible reports of human rights violations and abuses, including killings, forced disappearances, ill treatment, arbitrary arrests and detentions, threats and restrictions on the freedom of association, expression, and movement.
Civil unrest has left more than 1,000 people dead in the troubled East African country. Ugandan police have detained a German man accused of sexually abusing underprivileged children at a home he's been running for 10 years. Police raided the 70-year-old man's home on Sunday and detained his wife for questioning. He has been released on bail. Around 20 children were rescued. And finally, doctors have confirmed that a second HIV patient is in sustained remission after a bone marrow transplant treated blood cancers. Doctors reported that the man, known only as the London patient, has shown no signs of the virus for nearly 19 months, proving that the AIDS-causing condition could one day be curable. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
And this is DW's Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And my name is Eunice Wanjiru. We are also live on Facebook. Thank you to all of you tuning in. Emmanuel Mbella from Boya in Cameroon and Emmanuel Awule from Accra, Ghana, and all of you there, Bell Epignosis, thank you for sharing. Thank you for tuning in.
We begin the program in Rwanda, where the government has reiterated that the movement of goods and services along its borders with neighboring Uganda are normal, apart from a particular cross-border point of Gatuna that was closed off for rehabilitation.
The statement from the Rwandan government comes after recent media reports of rising tensions between the two neighbors that saw Rwanda close off its borders, a move that affected trade and free movement of nationals from both sides. From Kigali, Nasra Bishumba reports.
Relations between Rwanda and Uganda date many years back, but the recent media reports on the closure of border points between Rwanda and Uganda worried many, especially traders who use the Kigali-Kampala routes. But at a press conference this Tuesday, Rwanda's Foreign Affairs Minister Richard Sezibera refuted the allegations and emphasized that some border points were closed due to ongoing construction work.
Rwanda's borders with all our neighbors are open on the Rwandan side. All the borders are open. There is a challenge with Gatuna because there is an ongoing construction of the one-stop border post. That is going on well. We had a challenge because from the 21st, Gatuna was clogged up for many reasons. Truck drivers not responding quickly enough to use alternative routes. There was a point at which they couldn't turn, those who wanted to turn. So there were quite a series of logistical issues.
Foreign Affairs Minister Richard Sezibera also explained to the press that for 2 years now, Uganda has continued to mistreat Rwandans who travel to Uganda on private dealings, and that over 900 of them were deported.
Rwandans are arrested, tortured, harassed, and deported for reasons which are not clear to us. The second challenge is that there are armed groups that are opposed to the government of Rwanda that have a violent agenda who operate in Uganda.
Diane Umwiza, a Rwandan who deals in African prints that she makes in Rwanda and sells in Uganda, told me how frustrated she was that she can't make ends meet and wants the Rwandan government to fix this issue as soon as it can.
It is really, really stressful for me and my clients. We are stuck with our merchandise. We can't sell. My clients are waiting for me. I'm losing money here. I'm spending because I cannot cross to Uganda and back freely. We really need a quick solution because it is very hard to spend money when you are not making any.
That was a Rwandan trader ending a report by Nasra Bishumba on the Rwanda-Uganda border tension. And for those following us on our Facebook page, as you can see in that picture, on the left is Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni, and on the right is Rwanda's President Paul Kagame. In the middle is Denis Sassou Nguesso of the Congo. The body language tells it all. Eunice, we have some comments.
Yes, we do. Go ahead.
And of course, we asked, you know, how best should the neighboring countries avoid an escalation of tensions between the borders? Wambi Michael asks, where are their diplomats? I think they would do a better job. We should avoid incidents similar to Kisangani clashes between Uganda and the Rwandan army. Eunice, for those who don't know the Kisangani clashes, they were 20 years ago when both armies clashed in neighboring DRC.
Well, Blasis Owongsang is saying, this is probably because he is not the Minister of Defense or Minister of Interior. I just don't know what to say. Journalists do this all the time. They take a question that concerns an astronaut and they will prefer to as a minor.
Okay, well said. Bless you. Next time, try to be a little bit clear for the sake of other listeners. Fujans Irakoze says, the President Kagame and Museveni can discuss in order to resolve their problems. Many thanks for those comments. Now, to neighboring Burundi, where the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, has said that Burundi has forced their office to shut down after 23 years.
Bachelet said the Burundian government had declared it had made sufficient progress in human rights, so the UN Rights Office in Bujumbura was no longer justified. From Bujumbura, here's Apollinaire Niyirora.
Speaking to me via telephone, Burundi's Human Rights Minister, Martin Ivyabandi, said there are no more mass violations in the country like before, hence the need to close the UN Human Rights Office.
Now there is no massive violation of human rights. I will discuss it with Human Rights Council responsible, especially the High Commissioner for Human Rights, and we showed her there was no necessity to have an office in Burundi.
But locals are not happy with the latest development, as it will give the government and the security agents to carry out human rights abuses unabated.
Things will definitely change very much, because in recent days a person will get in trouble and run to the human rights office to lodge a complaint. But now it means that any aggrieved person will have nowhere to go, because I think the government cannot speak on his or her behalf. There are hard times ahead for ordinary people.
It's really a blow for the human rights in the country, because we understand the past on how it was and how the human rights violations were done during the 2015 crisis. The body had helped at least to bring out the reports and to point out the perpetrators in order to ensure that justice can be done. But again, now if you find that it is closed and no one can monitor independently with the transparency, we find this decision is really a blot for the human rights and the Burundians and victims in particular.
In December 2016, the Burundian government had suspended cooperation with the office in Burundi and had requested its closure. It was accused of making wrong and biased reports on the situation of human rights in Burundi, especially following the country's 2015 political crisis.
Apollinaire Riera with that comment. And Da Vinci says it's good because the UN is a scam. African states should exit UN entirely.
And von Kelvin is saying it is welcome. It's a welcome move because the body is useless. See what is happening in Cameroon and they are silent. Well, thank you so much for your comments. We proceed. In Zambia's broadcasting regulator this week ordered 1 month suspension of a TV channel that has been critical of the government, just days after the governing party accused the station of bias and unprofessionalism.
Well, the TV is Prime TV, and a short while ago I spoke to Helen Mwale, the regional chairperson of the Media Institute for Southern Africa, MISA. Helen Mwale, to talk more about why they closed it.
One thing that we must bear in mind is that each broadcasting or each media house has got its own house rules. And we know that Prime TV has got an editorial policy that guides them in whatever they are doing. Prime TV somehow completely sidelines the ruling party. There are some news items that they air. And the biasness that they are talking about, really, we do not have evidence on that. We are still waiting for them to give us critical news items that are biased.
There is also a cross-section of the Zambian society that thinks that the Zambian National Broadcasting Corporation, ZNBC, only reports the government side of the story, and Prime TV is trying to bring out the other side of the story. What do you say about media development in Zambia in general?
Yes, we do take note of ZNBC and the role that the public broadcaster plays. But on the other hand also, both ZNBC and Prime TV have the duty to inform the citizens of this country on an informed point of view. They need to be fair, they need to be balanced, they need to be factual, and they need, above all, to be impartial in whatever they are doing.
How would you describe then the relationship between the media in Zambia and the government of President Edgar Lungu?
That's a tricky one, but I think the media and the government of President Edgar Lungu, so far, they've worked very well, except that we have a few differences between individuals of the ruling party and certain media houses. We also have differences between opposition political parties and public media houses. The need for those in the ruling party or in government to appreciate the role of public media. There is need for those people to understand that this media operates in such a manner. We cannot make everyone become a public media. We cannot make everyone dance to their tune. No. We need to give room to diverse views. Because we know that the critical views that come from a certain section of the citizens are not aired by the public media. Questions that Zambians are asking, accountability issues. We have issues to do with access to information. So Zambians are asking. We have issues of corruption. We have the Fink report. We have all these things that are transparent reports that are being issued every now and then. We have governance reports. We have all these things, you know, that border generally on human rights. People are asking questions, and we need answers. So people think, which one is the right channel for us to ask these questions? They opt to go to private media.
I was speaking to Helen Mwale, the regional chairperson of the Media Institute for Southern Africa, MISA, in Zambia, Lusaka.
In case you've just tuned in, you're listening to DW's Africa Link program, coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Eunice Wanjiro.
And my name is Isaac Mugabe. A warm welcome to those following us on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and through our partner radio stations across the continent. I can see ZH Musoke. He is in Uganda. Mustafa Guy says he's following from Italy, and he says, ciao. Well, ciao back to you, and Musoke, we welcome you and your comments, of course. Now, coming up in the next 15 minutes, Nigeria's main opposition leader's son-in-law and lawyer have been arrested, but other details about any charges we'll hear from a correspondent on the ground.
And we'll head to Lamu in Kenya, where donkeys are disappearing and an animal welfare organization is working to save these animals. But why are they disappearing?
Sababu ipomeshen ilioko.
The information that we are getting is that the Chinese have taken the donkeys. About 100 to 150 donkeys have been reported missing, and nobody knows where they are.
These stories and also our usual Focus on Europe segment, it's quite interesting, so don't go away. But we start off this part of the show in Nigeria, where anti-corruption investigators arrested a relative of the run-up in Nigeria's presidential elections, as well as the candidate's lawyer. The country's main opposition leader's son-in-law and lawyer were arrested by officials from the Economic and Financial Crimes Commission, or EFFCC, as they are known.
Now, according to an EFCC official, Atiku's son-in-law is being investigated over an alleged case of money laundering. I caught up with our correspondent Ben Shemang in Nigeria and wanted to find out whether there were details about any charges.
In terms of details, the Economic and Financial Crimes Commission is saying that they still have to carry out detailed examinations and investigations into various finances, how the inflows of money, outflows of money, and that some of these monies are also being traced to many other people. For example, the Deputy Director General of the Atiku Campaign Organization, Tanimu Turaki, is also been arrested. So quite a lot of things here.
Now, Atiku has alleged political persecution, and he even went on to tweet that his son-in-law and lawyer were paying the price for supporting me. That's what he said. We get to hear this a lot coming from opposition, from the opposition in African countries after the elections. But how legitimate is this particular situation?
Well, for the Economic and Financial Crimes Commission to go into all of this arrest, more so they are talking money is involved. There is also what you call the Finance Intelligence Unit. They work in concert. It's an international agency. They check money laundering. They check terrorism funding and all that. So for EFCC to have gone into arresting these people, it also means that probably the Finance Intelligence Unit of the Central Bank of Nigeria is involved. And that is why they've also frozen the accounts of many other people in the opposition. And so as we are talking, they're planning to do a protest this very evening to go to the headquarters of the Independent National Electoral Commission to protest all of this.
Nigeria police have also said that more than 300 people were arrested on suspicion of committing electoral offences during the country's recent elections. From this arrested, do we know how many are actually part of the opposition and how many are supporting the ruling government?
Well, the police will not categorize as to who is where when it comes to arrest, because they all are always being lumped together. But if they are also people without influence, people hardly can know them. And that is why when you have big names like senators being arrested, you begin to know them easily. But the police have actually said that they've been able to do a lot of arrests and that they intend to take them to court for prosecution. And even as we are talking right now, there's also more arrests in Rivers State, because they're saying that some people are planning to disrupt the elections over there. And so the military is also being deployed to ensure that the threats are not being carried out.
I was speaking to DW's Ben Shemang in Abuja. Now, there have been, Nigerians are quite, they're not really on one page when it comes to how fair or transparent mm-hmm. the elections were. We have comments here. Chi Echezonam Anamasonye is saying the Electoral Commission rigged the election or the votes in favor of the ruling party.
Uche Oji says Buhari will be the first president-elect to be sacked by the election tribunal. Quote me on that.
Salisu Maiwada is saying you better ask the international observers to give their own side of the story.
And Abubakar Haruna Kazaure says the election was not fair. To be honest with myself, despite that, I love Buhari.
And then Foge James is asking, how does the election fraud happen? How does election fraud happen when the UN and the so-called Intel community sent their observers?
Many thanks for your comments. You can keep up the debate as usual on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Africa on the move.
Donkey skin has become the new ivory, and it's in high demand in China due to its use in traditional Chinese medicine called ejiao. This demand has resulted in a decline in the number of donkeys in Kenya, and particularly in Lamu, where they are a main mode of transport.
Mm-hmm. The donkey's units, I mean, first was the skin, the hooves, and now, oh, it's the skin. Anyway, many Lamu residents depend on donkeys for their livelihoods, but the donkeys are disappearing. An animal welfare organization in the area is now working to save the animals from smuggling and slaughter. Susan Horton presents this report by Rahab Wamboye.
Lamu Island is the oldest and best preserved Swahili settlement in East Africa. With this history comes a long list of well-preserved traditions, one of which is the importance of the donkey. You won't find many motorized vehicles here on Lamu. Donkeys are the main mode of transport. Don't have your own? No problem. You can hire out a four-legged transporter to get yourself or your belongings from A to B. But something is disrupting the order of things on Lamu. The donkeys are disappearing, and Hussein Ali can confirm this.
My donkeys carry building stones, sand and cement. If business is low, I could make around 30 euros per day. But now getting even 20 euros is hard because the number of donkeys I have keeps going down. I have lost 3 donkeys.
29-year-old Ali Omar has lost his donkey too. He says he knows who's behind the disappearances, the Chinese.
The information that we are getting is that the Chinese have taken the donkeys. About 100 to 150 donkeys have been reported missing and nobody knows where they are. In Lamu, we all know each other. We are all friends. Every donkey has a mark showing who the owner is.
Donkey skin is sought after in China because it's used in a traditional Chinese medicine called ejiao. This demand makes the animals more valuable and thus more attractive to thieves. People like Abdul Hakim, whose livelihoods depend on the animals, are having to look around for alternative work.
I have a family. I can't just do nothing. I had to get another job. Now I sell fish, but it takes time to understand a new business. I'm used to donkeys. It has also affected my income, so losing my donkeys has had a huge effect on me.
The tradition of working with donkeys has been passed down through the generations in Lamu. But is this important part of Lamu culture doomed to die out? Animal welfare organization, the Donkey Sanctuary, has been protecting donkeys from ill treatment for decades. It's now working to save the animals from smuggling and slaughter. 30-year-old Felix Rachionyo works at the Lamu Sanctuary.
We enlighten them on the need now to be extra vigilant, to keep their donkeys, and also to provide some shelters. They're also working with the county government, veterinary department, just to ensure that the movement of donkeys in and from the county is regulated through the issuance of maybe a movement permit so that we can easily trace where these donkeys are going to and also where these donkeys are coming from.
In April last year, the Kenyan government reacted to fears that donkeys were dying out by suspending the licensing of donkey slaughterhouses in the country. But this has done little to curb illegal poaching. The young people of Lamu can only hope that more will be done to protect their animals, their traditions, and their livelihoods.
A report by Rahab Wambuya and presented by Susan Holton. Now, Eunice, you know, the donkeys keep on disappearing and, you know, ending up in the abattoirs or at the slaughterhouses just for their skins to satisfy the Chinese market.
That's true. Even if the, especially now in the Kenyan government, they've decided to close these slaughterhouses, still donkeys are disappearing. You wonder why. Why are they disappearing?
And you heard in that report, you know, that young man who says on a good day he can earn up to 30 US dollars, but he has lost, his donkeys, four of them have disappeared in recent years. Anyway.
It's true. And even Kenya has been seen as a spot where donkeys are being smuggled. So they're coming from also different other countries. So let's hope that things will get better and that donkeys are not going to, you know, remain in the country.
Focus Europe.
Now, many Catholics around the world hope that the recent Vatican Summit on sex abuse will lead to tangible change in the church and shed a spotlight on new countries where scandals may have happened. For others, it's a revisit to a painful past.
That's the case of nominally Catholic France, where the four-day meeting coincided with the release of an explosive movie on a pedophilia scandal still very much in the headlines, along with a book on homosexuality in the priesthood, another hot-button issue facing the church. Lisa Bryant reports from Paris.
Je m'appelle Alexandre Guérin, père de cinq enfants.
François Ozon's Grâce à Dieu, or By the Grace of God, got the go-ahead just hours before its release, despite efforts to block it in court. The movie is based on a real scandal still rocking the French Catholic Church. It involves priest Bernard Prenat, accused of molesting dozens of boys during the 1980s and 90s. The Archbishop of Lyon, Cardinal Philippe Barbarin, is currently on trial on charges of failing to act against the accusations. Charges he denies. Father Prenat has confessed to molesting Boy Scouts. He is also due to go on trial later this year.
Que le père Prenat est revenu sur la région de Lyon.
The movie is not black and white. Director Ozon said in this radio interview that when he met the real-life protagonists, he realized everybody was a victim to a certain extent.
I think the Catholic Church is in the process of understanding the seriousness of pedophilia. But for a long time, within the church, it was considered like adultery and homosexuality on the same level of sin.
Ozon invited the church hierarchy to the movie's preview in Lyon and got a surprisingly upbeat reaction. Here's Vincent Nemo, spokesman for the French Bishops' Conference, on public TV.
Le film de François Ozon n'est pas un scandale.
François Ozon's movie is not a scandal. We see it as another stone in the fight against pedophilia.
French bishops have also agreed to award compensation to victims of sexual abuse whose cases fall outside the French statute of limitations. Like many other traditionally Catholic countries in Europe, France is moving increasingly further from the church. The country bans official surveys based on ethnic or religious affiliation, but private polls show that less than two-thirds of French declare themselves Catholic today, compared to nearly 90% in the early 1970s. François Devaux, head of victims group La Parole Libérée, and who is portrayed in the movie, told French TV he hopes the church finally takes action on a scandal that has tainted the institution for centuries. Meanwhile, a separate but controversial book on homosexuality in the church hit stores on Thursday. Titled In the Closet of the Vatican and reportedly based on hundreds of interviews, it exposes a gay subculture and duplicity allegedly rife in the Catholic hierarchy. Studies show there is no correlation between homosexuality and sexual abuse, although some members of the Catholic clergy suggest otherwise.
Une majorité silencieuse dans le sens où chacun protège son petit secret.
In interviews like this one, gay author Frédéric Martel describes a so-called silent majority in the church where he claims members are protecting their sexual status by pretending to be homophobic. And indeed, homosexuality in the church was one of the central topics of discussions during the Vatican summit, even though it wasn't on the official agenda.
A report by Lisa Bryant.
And just to let you know that for the stories that we've covered on this show, more to them, you can go to our page, dw.com/Africa. With that, we come to the end of this show. On behalf of the team, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Eunice Wanjiru.
Bye for now.
DW. Made for Minds.